Alrighty, and we're live.
And we are live. All right, that was a very smooth intro for today.
Yeah.
There we go.
For sure.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Adelko. Welcome to Live at the Hive, episode 139.
Mm-hmm. I'm Matt Stefanich.
I'm Sachiko.
Yeah, and we have a good live. Dan's with us this live. I know we missed Dan last week, but we're good to go for this week. And we have some really good topics to talk about in terms of kind of bridging your organic and your paid spend to reach more customers, essentially.
We sure do. Actually, just one quick thing. So, Sachiko, mm-hmm. Do you have a pair of headphones so we don't get an echo on the stream? You got any headphones kicking around there close by? Yeah. If you gotta go, you gotta go.
It's all good.
Hello, Stacy. Hey, Mate. Everybody's coming into the live stream on Facebook, anyways. So we've got some big news this week. We're going to start with a little bit of current affairs, internet drama.
Yeah, to say the least. Oh my goodness, this has been insane.
This is a bit of a crazy one. Can you flip over to the BBC article?
Maybe. Yep, for sure. I got it right here for us.
So in the world of, oops, my Twitter account got hacked because of Twitter. what was this? Was it 2 days ago?
I think it was two days ago. Apparently, some hackers took over some verified accounts, some pretty big verified accounts, mm-hmm. presidential accounts, Elon Musk, and tweeted kind of like a little scam with Bitcoin, where if you sent them any amount of Bitcoin, they would double it and send it back to you. And I think it even went to the extent of people who had verified accounts who weren't hacked initially, they were actually unable to tweet. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty interesting.
Well, they were locked out of their accounts. I guess apparently what happened is there's some super magical backend admin system, obviously at Twitter, that gives Twitter admins a very small number of them.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them kind of complete control over the account. And what ended up happening, and I'm doing this kind of fuzzily from the memory I have of, you know, watching YouTube videos about this and reading some articles. The accounts were basically reset with new passwords, and then those hackers had control of that account until Twitter figured out. I don't think it was a particularly long period of time.
Yeah, no, this is a really quick. I think it was even less than an hour that it was there, but that was enough for hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin to be stolen from people.
Absolutely. Well, and the other thing was too is that Twitter then took the action of actually locking all blue checkmark accounts, so all verified accounts were mm-hmm. deactivated and made inaccessible. They basically locked them down completely.
Yeah.
Disabled the direct messaging. That was a really strong reaction, I guess.
Yeah.
Rightly so. Mm-hmm. And then the cryptocurrency scam account, the bigger kind of conversation about this is, you know, given how, say, Trump is using Twitter, right, and mm-hmm. politicians are starting to use Twitter, this is a really dangerous backdoor that the team at Twitter was actually socially engineered. So these are high-level engineers that,
For sure, yeah, and I think these profiles that were targeted, they have, you know, we were joking about it before in terms of starting World War III, but mm-hmm. I mean, it has implications where some of these accounts can even change markets up. We've seen that before with Elon Musk with some of his tweets changing up some of the stock price of Tesla and some of his other companies like SpaceX, right? So it's quite serious, just not in terms of the Bitcoin that was stolen, but the precedent that goes forward with it, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen that there is a bit of fallout from this as well. You know, Google search is dropping tweets carousels after that Twitter hack, and
that's our follow on. We can dive into that in a second.
Yeah.
The big part of this is that it was a coordinated attack with Twitter engineers' help. It wasn't intentional, but there has to be stronger, much stronger protections to disallow that from happening, for sure. This could cause, I mean, this was a relatively innocuous scam, to be honest. Could you imagine if somebody got a hold of, you know, a politician's account, what they could have tweeted? They could have literally done anything. So there is kind of a huge danger there. And then, the next follow-on to that is in the next article, that Google very, very quickly rolled out a drop of the Twitter carousel. And if you pull up the article, you can see you can see the before and after. And that literally happened today.
Yep.
Yesterday. Like, as it happened, Google literally dropped it.
And I think, look, I think it's more of a, it's most likely it's a Google being careful with the whole scenario. But also I find it interesting. It might be a way to kind of, I don't know if we're going to be seeing the Twitter carousel coming back anytime soon, just because, you know, the search engine is used for like credible information as well. Right. And if someone's searching for some important topic and some of these tweets in the Twitter carousel contain either fake news or sensitive information that someone might not want to receive when they first search a term, I can see why they would take down the Twitter carousel after an attack like that. It's we're gonna probably see it back sometime soon, but like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if it's down for a certain amount of time before Jack and his crew over at Twitter kind of fix some back doors.
That's a huge change and would be have a huge effect on Twitter. If you jump down in the article and click on the screenshot, it'll take you right into Brody Clark at Brody SEO. He's got a couple of screenshots there. Just from an influencer or a business perspective, what you're seeing there is like, look at the difference in the search engine results, right? So with the carousel, point being that scam was very visible for very popular searches, right? People like Kanye and Barack Obama. I mean, the reach that has even on a normal given day with that tweet carousel was massive. And you can see when they drop it, boom, there's just no results at all. Just their profile name. So really big news, really kind of, I know that at Jack tweeted out an apology today. I don't know if you've got
I'll bring it up.
So at Jack, for those of you who are not aware, that is Jack is the CEO of both Twitter and Square. There's a pretty lengthy Twitter support thread on their actions around this, and he was tweeting out a bunch of apologies, but I feel like they got to tighten up the ship if they're becoming such an important part of communication and infrastructure, right?
Especially if they're trying to kind of shift the, I guess you could say, structure power from Facebook to Twitter, right? They're trying to move users more from Facebook in terms of claiming that they have a better privacy policy and things like that, right? This is definitely going to put a slight roadblock in their plan for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's from the that's this week's marketing drama. That was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
So why don't we dive right in? What are we talking about today, folks?
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about kind of how to bridge the organic and paid spend to reach your audiences and customers in areas where you haven't tried yet, but also kind of expand your reach as well. And I know, Sashita, you've been doing this quite a bit throughout the past number of weeks, especially with some of our newer clients. So, we have a few articles here that we'll dive into. And of course, as always, we'll take questions from anyone in the audience should they have one.
Absolutely. We update that title down there at the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it. There we go. So I think just to get started, and then I think Sashita's got a few different tactics to talk about in terms of this overall strategy. But if we're talking about the strategy, I think it's really important to understand that, especially with social channels. I mean, yes, you can do direct response, and you can have that as part of your strategy of rolling out an advertising program. But the real power comes in, and we've got a couple of actual examples from our past and some of the tests of things that we queued up and went viral in the Facebook algorithm, and how you can do use similar strategies. But strategically, the concept is to develop quality organic content, pair it with the advertising communication strategy that you've got, mm-hmm. and with your organic content is also giving it a little bit of a boost to a very targeted audience that makes it highly relatable for those individuals. Boosting that organic content is in part Facebook's and Instagram's the days of the free lunches are over. There's still a free lunch on TikTok, so if you want a free lunch, you can go there to build your content strategy. But Facebook, really, there isn't a free lunch, especially for businesses. You should be assigning a certain portion for boosting, and then boosting to your and creating that content, high quality, engaging, organic content, and boosting it to a specific audience where that content is relevant to them.
Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
So I would like to add to that. So we are talking about, and you know, like all the marketers and our clients, even advertisers, they need to understand that it is not basically paid versus organic. It is how you work with them together simultaneously to achieve your business goals.
That's actually that's a very good point. It's part of our title. Well, I think we did Wonder Twin Powers Activate, but it's a little bit like peanut butter and jelly, right? The perfect combination of the two together are how you see success with these programs, not one. Like if you're just doing organic, then you're going to have a tougher time. If you're just doing paid and not doing any organic, then you're just a blindly broadcast advertising onto a network.
Yeah, and essentially you're also wasting money as well, where some of those resources can be spent to using, organic and paid and leverage with one another for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. All right, why don't we dive right in? Sashita, did you have one that you wanted to cover first?
So we could go through the paid social versus organic in the AdRoll article. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically it talks about all the benefits of paid and social or organic social. As we know, like the basic benefits of organic social strategies is basically it's free. Secondly, it's more of building customer relationships and boosting the confidence of your brand through building like-minded communities. That's what social is about. And then we could use paid advertising along with the social to kind of reinforce the values or the messaging that we are promoting through organic.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So again, I think it's a lot of this paid versus organic. And I think that, when you take the benefits of both sides of that and you're able to put a strategy together, then that's where you're gonna find a winning blend for your brand, and that's mm-hmm. and that's super important for businesses as they're coming through. And we're in stage three here in Ontario. Some parts of Canada and Ontario are still stage two, but as these times open up, and hopefully we continue down that path, there are a lot of eyes on social right now, and a lot of eyes on Facebook in particular, people using it. And now is the time to really listen to your audience. They're hyper engaged with businesses, mainly because I think a lot of individuals are focused on supporting businesses of many different sizes, right?
For sure, yeah. And I really like this paragraph here that they have when they're talking about merging the two strategies together. They have a line in here where they talk about, we've talked about this a bit last week as well, I think, with some of the email marketing, but instead of wasting time and experimenting with your paid social campaigns, experiment with organic social email campaigns and other low-cost methods and use the winners for paid social ads and promotions. That's definitely key. And if we have any viewers from the last week's episode, we went quite in depth in how email campaigns are quite effective in terms of increasing kind of your organic presence, your organic lead generation, etc. Right. So very, very powerful strategies to go in tandem with paid spending here for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also add to that, you can obviously experiment with organic, but and Sashita, you can give a few tips here as well. What we typically will do is run very small pilots just to get a feel for the effectiveness. So, you know, you're really conserving that spend anywhere from $20 to even $30.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for organic, for paid advertising, we have very high CPCs for our main keywords, and we don't, our budget is restricting us to spend so much. Mm-hmm. Then what we could do is basically filter out these high converting keywords and add them to SEO or target them to your organic social media. So, you know, you get maximum visibility using both channels.
For sure. Sure. Yeah. And they give some great examples in this article here. If I can pull them up, they kind of talk about direct to customer brands successfully navigating kind of paid and organic social strategies. And these are probably social strategies that you've seen out there just throughout your feeds naturally. And you might have not even noticed them. Like, for example, they're talking about the Casper mattresses, right? Dollar Shave Club. These are really good examples. And the article talks about how these are great examples of how they kind of give established companies like mattress companies, for example, in Casper, right? Or Gillette and Dollar Shave Club, really a run for their money when it comes to social media. They really understand how to kind of effectively target audiences and managing additional costs as well.
Yep. It is incredibly important that you understand how to use precision targeting for your audiences. Part of the reason that Casper and Dollar Shave Club have been very successful is they are most certainly not just running to a generic audience. They are running to very specific audiences that they are creating within Facebook Business Manager, for example, and potentially Google Ads and Instagram. That is a key to really understand the messaging that you can tailor, for example, to a 65 plus audience. Versus an audience that's, you know, 18 to 25 years old. And developing those audiences and refining those audiences. So what you're able to do is you're able to see and understand how your content is resonating with those individuals. It makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely, for sure. And we've gone, we've talked about that multiple times throughout the 139 lives that we've done right now, right?
Yeah.
So it stays consistent, but I mean, it just shows how important it is to keep that in mind when you're developing your strategies. And I do have here as well, they do have a list of some brands that kind of surpass established competitors by using the following tactics. So for people in the live, feel free to go through this article, look at them yourselves and see which one of these or which few you can implement in your marketing strategies starting next week.
Mm-hmm. You know, definitely on the organic side, and even obviously with your advertising, is, you know, really spend time becoming a storyteller. I know that Stacey and the social team spend a lot of time with Matteo and Justin kind of coming up with creative ideas. We try to come up with creative ideas for a whole bunch of different campaigns, especially when they're lead generation. So we're giving away a lead magnet. I think the one recent one was the DIY pergola lead mm-hmm. magnet. Has been really well received.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to show you that it's a whole lot of testing and really feeling out the market and understanding what attracts people, right?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that kind of I'll let that point naturally take us into the next article that kind of dives more into some tips to kind of help leverage organic and paid social media through a customer journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll bring up this article here. This is from Social Media Today. And now they have some really great tactics in here for how to use social for brand awareness and some tips for organic social use that you can start using today that will help your strategy in pairing this up with your paid ads. And some of these in here that I see, I mean, these are strategies that we're always really pushing towards our social accounts, even if we're not directly using a paid strategy. In tandem with the organic, these are great points that we keep reiterating throughout the lives over and over again.
Absolutely. I think one of the things as well is the power of video and mm-hmm. what we can do with video, whether it's promo style, video short form, or a you know, 5 second to 10 second pre-roll, right?
Yep.
Let's just see here.
Absolutely. And they also do, you know, some tips for the paid as well. So using social ads to make your first point of contact with new customers, right? Working with influencers, people definitely have been doing that for years now. But I think that there's underlining strategies and how you pair this up, right? Like really start maybe create, like, I think that doing this, for example, so for this brand, Happy Socks, I would do, if you're going to be pairing it up with like an influencer, for example, I would create maybe a 2 week, 3 week social media calendar, pushing organic content. So yeah, maybe 3 or 4 days down, you have a good line of branded, consistent influencer social content on your feed, and then pair that up with a really good spend and a really good audience build for your paid advertising spend. I don't know, Sashita. I think we've even done that in the past with I think coffee in the past, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
Totally. Stacy's got a great comment. If you could feature it there, you need to stand out. Dollar Shave Club does a great job using humor. In fact, that is one of the things that the founder of Dollar Shave Club, fun fact, he was a former stand-up comedian. And when they were a scrappy little startup, now they got sold for like $1 billion or something ridiculous. Yeah. Very, very large amount. Mm-hmm. But when they started out, they were literally just another startup with a very slim chance of surviving. So one of their strategies was their founder said, look, I used to be a stand-up comic. I like comedy. That's what we're going to do because we don't have any money. And we're just going to create videos like this. And it was literally one of the things that really defined Dollar Shave Club, in addition to the fact that they really hit a pain point of why is a 5-pack of men's razors like $44, right?
Yeah, true, right?
So there's that too. So, but you can see that that's a great way, and they advertised quite a bit, but initially they were using organic content. And then what they did with their organic content was they would boost and promote that content alongside with their offers as well. So they had kind of a triple threat happening there all at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they even built out their influencer program quite significantly. I think if you watch maybe 5 YouTubers in a row, I can guarantee you that one of those 5 YouTubers is going to be sponsored by Dollar Shave Club or any of these direct customer brands, right?
Rich Wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. NordVPN, right? Yeah. Yeah,
they're the big ones on YouTube for sure.
It works, right? Yeah,
it sure does. And I actually think one of the important things to look at, I know we sometimes poke fun at some YouTubers and stuff, but in all seriousness, YouTubers and influencers are actually mini media production companies. Some of them are not so mini. Like, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with these, the Nelk Boys. They're a prank YouTube channel. They have anytime they shoot a video, their production team is 19 people at any given time is their entire production team. So these are not, you know, I think the days of, you know, the YouTuber at home with the webcam, those days are a little bit behind at this point. But if you're looking for content ideas and how to engage with an audience, I would spend a little bit of time and actually go and research some influencers in your space on YouTube, because I think there's huge content lessons to be learned. These people, when if you think about, you know, some are posting every day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever tried to do that. That is a phenomenal amount of work.
Yeah.
Push out content, for sure. And to make good content.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll bring this up. This is I think this is a good example in terms of what we're talking about here. But Good Mythical Morning, this has been a channel on YouTube. I'd probably say since the early days, they have around 16.5 million subscribers, but they have a really high frequency of video uploads. They have a huge team working behind them to pump out all of this content, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is the type of YouTube influencer pairing that, you know, people should be looking for. Of course, you know, this is a quite significant example, but if you could find something that kind of goes along the lines of what channels like Good Mythical Morning and some other produced content, I think that would work for your strategy quite significantly. Yeah,
for sure. And the important part here, so actually there's a fun story about Good Mythical Morning. That's what are the names? Rhett and I can't remember.
Rhett and Link.
Rhett and Link, yeah.
Yeah.
If you've seen a Wix commercial recently, you'll have seen them because they have one. They actually started out just as a podcast and then they started a YouTube channel. They've been around for about 10 years. There used to be a really famous channel called Smosh that has a very dramatic story about a YouTuber that created a great brand and a great company and then sold to the wrong guys. The wrong team of people ended up having it's a really sad story, actually. But Mythic Entertainment, which is the parent company of Good Mythical Morning, they picked up Smosh, and Smosh still lives. And it got kind of it's not what it was in terms of its reach anymore. But just an interesting story about, I guess the point of this, as we're talking about our topic, is that if you're thinking of your advertising, I think you've got to treat yourself like a mini production company, like really do some research there. And I think YouTubers are a great source of inspiration. There will be, I guarantee you, a YouTube channel for whatever it is that you do. I think it's safe to say that, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So just a quick tip is if you're looking for ideas and trying to figure out how to structure a content strategy and combine it with some paid promotion, jump onto YouTube. You could also look at Facebook Watch too. That's totally valid as well. That's not an insignificant site to look for inspiration. Search for your product type, your competitors, and look at the influencers in that space and just watch what they're doing and how they're doing it. You can really learn a lot because, again, a YouTuber is really focused, and an influencer, if they're good at what they do, is 100% focused on building an engaged community and an engaged audience, right? Mm-hmm. You might also find a YouTube channel or a YouTuber or content creator that is right in line with what you do, and maybe they have some reasonable rates that you can work with them on.
Exactly. It doesn't hurt to ask, right? You'll get your answer if you don't ask, right? That's right.
Just one last point. I don't want to belabor it. Is the important thing to understand with influencers is they are typically much more interested in working with companies and businesses that they're either philosophically aligned with or companies that they like. Mm-hmm. As opposed to necessarily going straight for a dollar amount. I know definitely of influencers that have worked with us in the past on smaller budgets, only because we made them part of the creative process and they liked that. We weren't putting them into some god awful 60-minute meeting with a bunch of marketing managers from across North America type thing.
Yep.
But letting their creative juices flow. If you're dealing with influencers, talk to them on the influencer level. Because if you give them creative control and you work with them, that means a lot to these types of content creators.
Absolutely.
And if you think about it this way, you're giving them the latitude to be creative, which is what they want. Mm-hmm. And technically, you're getting some free creative direction from somebody that is specifically building an audience geared towards your product.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I wish I knew the name of him off the top of my head. He's actually a very popular finance YouTuber. And he actually just got mentioned by PewDiePie.
Is it Dave Ramsey?
Dave Ramsey, maybe. He's got some really good... He does all things on, like, investments.
it's probably Dave Ramsey does stuff with like investments, debt. It's pretty produced as well.
It's not Dave Ramsey. I'm just looking it up. This guy's a younger guy. I'll find out. I'll find it. I'm subscribed to his channel here somewhere. But he does things, you know, typically. So for example, like in the finance world, I think Dave Portnoy has kind of injected a whole bunch of entertainment into day trading and finances, but typically finance is looked at as a little bit drier, but there's a whole new generation. And I think Dave Ramsey's probably a little bit, you know, he's probably kind of a hybrid of this. There are certainly YouTubers out there that are a little bit more, like they're more modern. They're more, their appeal, lies in a much younger audience. I'll find it here. I got 277 subscriptions. That's all.
Wow. Nice.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome.
So let's move right along. Why don't we jump into the next one and we'll let Sashita.
Sashita, which article would you like to go into next?
I would like to talk about the three ways to bridge the gap between organic, or you can say SEO and PPC.
Yep. Awesome. Alrighty, so I have this article up here for us now. Yeah, so let's dive into this guy. Yeah.
So firstly, the first way to do so is basically unify your marketing data and resources. So, you know, it's a very basic point, but yeah, sometimes we do overlook such things, but, you know, it is very necessary to go through not just one reporting platform, like, you know, maybe you go through just only analytics, but we need to dive into, you know, Google Analytics, your assisted conversion data, or for any matter, any other, you know, reporting ways that you're using. And then we need to sit together with your SEO team and discuss all the ways that, you know, you could form strategies using the data on where to concentrate more or which keyword to concentrate more on. And then second point is develop a custom data-driven attribution model. Yeah, right there. So basically what it talks about is how to consider, or you should consider, different kinds of marketing platforms that you're using and how they are driving traffic to your website or your products data. So what it basically says is, and I really agree with that point, is generally maybe a makeup shopper, for instance, you know, we would go and search long tail keywords. And then if you get the appropriate brand, you'd go in and search in social media and see how are they promoting and what are the products and the reviews there. And then again, you know, make again 2-3 maybe more searches related to the product. So what I'm trying to say is you know, there's a lot of steps before you take your buying decision.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so we need to look at all the marketing channels that actually influence the buying decisions.
Absolutely. That's a really important point that you make there, Sashita. I think one of the things that we see when we see, you know, especially maybe people that are novices at these platforms, because these platforms are really complicated. It can't be understated anymore. There are express versions of everything. For example, just boosting within Facebook, and the intention for them there, and I won't dive too much into Facebook, but you could just boost a post. For example, if you're using AdWords Express, you're missing, or Google Ads Express, I guess now, if you're using these very basic tools, you need to take a step back and pause before you start, as Sashita said, making your buying decision. A few free tools that you can use, and a couple of tips. Absolutely look at your analytics, like Sashita is saying. But using competitive tools like SEMrush is one. Ahrefs.com is another. There are a number of low-cost tools, or modestly costed tools. You could subscribe for 1 month if you wanted to as well, and then, you know, not have to recur it if you're not going to use it. But look at your competitors, and then also then look at their keywords and their strategies and research what they're doing. Especially your larger competitors, because if again, you're thinking, okay, well, maybe my budget is $1,000 a month and I've got a competitor whose budget is $50,000 a month, mm-hmm. what could I possibly do? Well, with that advertising research, what you're able to do is, one, understand where they're successful. So wherever they're spending more is obviously leading them to success.
Yep.
Secondly, you're able to see when they've, you know, the types of copy and the types of offers and the types of content they're putting out there. That kind of research is incredibly important. And you can also use SEO data to surface other opportunities where your potential customers are searching, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And selection of those keywords can either make or break you, because we actually talked about this. We launched an SEO audit with a new client this week. And I think the interesting thing on the SEO side, which I've always been very passionate about SEO, because one, it's technical, yes, but two, I think, you know, a lot of times people say, well, we make SEO content. And the thing that always strikes me is SEO is search engine optimization. A search engine is just a thing. Mm-hmm. There's a human being sitting on the other side of that search engine. There's someone sitting at home on their mobile phone or on Google. Mm-hmm. They're looking for something. In a sense, this is psychology, right? There's what is driving somebody to search for a certain term, and what's their motivation? And mm-hmm. and when you can dig into that and understand what their pain point, their motivation is, what they're trying to achieve, you know, what their goal is, well, if you find that and you understand it, you can combine that SEO knowledge. I know that my customers have these pain points, and you can take modest sums. And especially, I think, Sashita, you also mentioned the long tail, the tail of search, those longer tail keywords and key phrases. They'll be less expensive because they'll have lower volume, but you can have thousands of them to make up for the volume, and you will get very strong intent. So you'll get higher conversions by looking for things, especially question-based searches are really great.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And using that combined knowledge like Sashita is recommending, which I totally agree with, is a game changer when you bridge those two pieces of knowledge and combine them together. Right.
For sure. Yeah. And I think this is one other point on that I will say is if you're working with a team of marketers like we do on a day to day basis, it's great to make sure that there's a working relationship between the traffic team and the content team, because just like we've been saying here, the content goes hand in hand. Right. Maybe if Sashita, for example, is doing some really good keyword research and she stumbles upon a piece of content that's missing from our strategy, or she's seen something that we can compete with in terms of linking, rankings, etc. It's a great way to kind of collaborate both teams' findings in a collaboration document. And I know we use these all the time just because they work, and it's a natural process that goes through when the content team is creating content with specific keywords that we're trying to rank for, or whether it's something that the traffic team finds on their end that they see an opportunity with, right?
Absolutely. And I think the one other point to make there is, I think that a lot of marketing groups make the mistake of saying, well, we've got some PPC happening over here, and we do some, our SEO people are over here, and our content people are over there. These are all facets of the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And to have three separate groups non-communicative in working on this really doesn't make a lot of sense. It's very inefficient. Mm-hmm. And again, this also started with, you know, Sashita pointing this out, is it's a collaboration. These things all affect each other. But way too often what we see is that it's not treated as a holistic omni-channel approach. It's treated mm-hmm. as three different silos. Yeah. And so, yeah, if you've got these types of teams working on your product or your platform or whatever it might be, you definitely want these groups working together closely to give each other guidance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if it's stepping out of your comfort zone, for example, right? Like, for example, for me, in PR, it was a challenge for me to transfer my skills over to even some of the traffic stuff that I do with Sashida. I know, Sashida, you do almost all of it. But when I'm trying to work with you, it's a little bit of my comfort zone, right? But that's why it's important as marketers to be versed in these different strategies, these different specialties, right? I mean, by no means am I an SEO or a PPC expert, but I know my way around enough where I know how to pair it with my public relations strategies and make it 10 times as effective as just a single strategy.
That's right. And just an example about how social and, I mean, paid and organic go hand in hand. So we have one of our clients, so we had a June promotion for them. And we also posted on their social media pages. And then we added the promotion as a promotion extension in their Google search ad. And the promotion extension almost had like a 70% conversion rate. Mm-hmm. And as the feedback that we got from the clients, most of these converted into probable customers. What I think is this wouldn't have been so successful if, you know, the users or the customers didn't get more information about this particular service from their social media pages or other platforms and channels.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are closing in on the 5 o'clock hour. Yep. So why don't we jump to our next topic here?
Awesome.
We have. Actually, there's one that you can pull up, Matt. I actually put this post into the Basecamp thread so you can, the actual image is in there so you can just pop it up.
Okay. Yep. Let's see here. Excellent. Alrighty.
All right. So this is an example here of 5 Minute Life is one of our sites. And what we've tended to do, this is a few years old now, but it was a really good example, I thought, of using a very modest budget and highly, highly targeting a message to a specific audience with absolutely. So on 5 Minute Life, it's actually an e-commerce store. There's several products available for sale there. A lot of it having to do with ketogenic diet and supplements, a whole bunch of things like that. Really, the idea is being healthy for busy families. That's what the whole site is about. So the concept here was the goal was to increase the awareness of 5 Minute Life, specifically to a 24 to 35 year old female audience with one or two children, however many children they have. And the idea being that we had a lot of content that was really highly relevant for them, but also understanding the psychology of that demographic, right? Mm-hmm. So the psychology of that demographic is typically when there are young children, quite typically, you know, the mother will be at home at least for a specific period of time, right? Prior to potentially going back to work. But regardless, they're a highly connected communications network using things like Facebook Messenger and Instagram Messenger, because you, in that position, you sometimes don't have the ability to meet face to face, right? But there's advice and support, especially for newborns, that kind of thing. And the concept was, you know, what kind of a message can we put out to those people that we really want them to know about 5 Minute Life? And we want them to know that it's also a place to go and laugh about the ridiculousness of life with young children.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I've heard statements like, don't poop in the basket, and, you know, saying, I never thought I'd hear myself say that, but here we are, right? You know, this is life with young children. This is how things go. So the idea being here is, how can we reach them and make them laugh? And we really want to tap into their networks because we know their networks are highly connected, right? So we created an audience based on all of those. We also created audience profiles based on things they might be interested in, might like. There were about 30 different Facebook pages that were very similarly themed, that we said, if you like that, you're going to like this. To our current female audience only and their friends. And we pushed it out, and it's just moms in a nutshell, and you can see it's just a meme, a little Toy Story meme, mom with their friends, and then when mom gets home, it's Jurassic Park time. As you can see, it reached 20, and this is an older screenshot, it reached 21.46 million people. This boost was, I believe, a total of $50 to $25 chunks, right?
Yep.
The important thing about this, the likes are amazing, 780, well, likes, comments, and shares combined is 1.1 million, basically. The most impactful thing about this were the number of shares that this thing got. And mm-hmm. it got a lot of shares, 167,999 shares. And if you multiply that number by the average number of friends, which I think at the time was 240, is probably much higher now, then when it gets shared into somebody's personal news feed, it has a much higher probability of being shown in their friends' organic news feeds rather than from our business page.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the exact strategy that we've been talking about today, which is how do you marry that organic content with a paid strategy to really maximize everything you can, especially on social, with the network effect of these social media networks. And it can be done. We've done this several times like this. It's a little bit of a poking and a prodding and a testing process.
Yep.
In the case of the memes, and I think we'll wrap it up in a minute, but in the case of the memes, I just want to give everybody one tip. You can find communities on reddit.com for pretty much anything. In this case, I found a bunch of Reddit boards, and I can't remember the name of them now, but they were basically for parents and moms to communicate, and they were posting a ton of these types of memes, and that's where that meme was trending a year before that in 2016. So therefore, if we know that it trended on Reddit once before, you know it's going to trend on Facebook if you give it the right mm-hmm. for the right audience, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. These things do get cyclical. So that's how you can also find out and figure out and decompose and deconstruct how to take advantage of the network effect and create content that your audience cares about and that they find engaging. And that I think that's the big opportunity with all of this.
Absolutely. For sure.
All right, folks. Well, it is 5:01.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, an overly ambitious amount of content, but that's okay.
Yeah, we I think there was only two articles left in there that we didn't cover, but as always, the team will put them through there in the comments, so feel free to read through them on your weekend and grab some knowledge for sure.
All right, everybody, well, thanks so much, and I just want to say one thing: life can change very quickly, so take every opportunity you can to spend time with your loved ones. So
absolutely.
Everybody unplug. Enjoy the super hot weekend we're going to have. I think it's supposed to rain Sunday.
Yeah.
And, you know, step away from your mobile device maybe for a little bit and spend some quality time with your
life. Absolutely. For
sure. All right. Peace, all right, guys. Have a great weekend.
See you guys. Bye.